You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
I've always put the dog man in like the werewolf realm. I've gotten multiple different answers of where that's actually come from. So for him, to send me a message that says, I saw Bigfoot, I just stopped everything I was doing. I believe if we're going to look at all cryptids, I think there's a combination of spiritual, interdimensional, extraterrestrial, and flesh and blood.
This is the Cryptid Creatures Podcast. I am Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Todd. How was your big week? Todd,
man, we're just staying busy, talking to people as usual, and yeah, getting some editing done, and you know,
awesome,
putting out some content for everybody. So it's been busy, man. Been busy for sure, as we both are. So
busy and always learning.
Right, always learning, and still confused.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Probably more so now than when we started.
Right. But we have a cool guest tonight. He's an author. And he wrote the book American Cryptids in Pursuit of the Elusive Creatures. And his name is Kenny Irish.
The Cryptopunkologist.
The Cryptopunkologist is right.
That's right. Brian. Everybody, most everybody in this field should know him.
Right. Yep. He's out there.
I've heard of him.
So he's everywhere.
He's around. So
he does a lot of shows and talking and stuff like that. So
yep. This should be a pretty cool show.
Yeah, I like his book. I read it, and as you did too, and got some stories we want to talk to him about. So, you know, I'm kind of ready to see what's going on here.
That's awesome. And if you guys haven't read it yet, pick it up and take a look. It's an easy read. It's very well put together. It's just a good book. So
it is. You're right. It is an easy read for sure. So, all right. Well, let's not waste any more time. Let's bring Kenny on, man.
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. Kenny, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, gentlemen.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Always an honor.
Right. For the listeners, you are Kenny Irish, the Cryptopunkologist. Why don't you explain that a little bit, that title?
Sure. Yeah. So growing up, I've always had like a major love for monsters. And as I got older, I got, you know, more into, you know, the cryptid creatures such as, you know, Sasquatch and, you know, just, you know, to just to name that one. And I'm a musician as well. So I've played in, you know, different bands, hardcore and punk bands. And my hair's at one point in time was a lot shorter than it is right now. I've actually got it pulled back. So that's why.
Okay.
So it looks the way it does. Right. And so I used to kind of wear it more of like a mohawk. And the founder of the group that I'm with, the New York Bigfoot Society, Gary, just said to me one day, he's like, you know, you're like the cryptopunkologist. And I was just like, you know, that kind of works because it's taken my two passions and just kind of combining them and putting them together. And, you know, and obviously, you know, I'm trying to sell books as an author too. And, you know, I mean, with, you know, so many books coming out every single day and so many different authors, you know, it's kind of hard to stick out too. But I mean, we've gotten to a point now where, again, I mean, you jump on online and you punch in the Cryptopunkologist or the Cryptopunk, this face pops up now. So, so there's no denying it anymore. And, and again, it's just, you know, for me, it's like, I really enjoy the fact that, you know, it's a nickname. And I mean, you know, people kind of call me the Cryptopunkologist. Usually they just call me by my first name, but you know, it's kind of gotten to a point where, you know, if anybody says, hey, the Cryptopunk, automatically it's me. I mean, you can say, hey, I know this guy named Kenny, you know, cryptozoologist. And, they're gonna be like, oh, really? Like Ken Gerhard, you know, they're going to name everybody before me. And then, but if, you know, they say, no, the Cryptopunk, they're gonna be like, oh yeah, I know who that guy is.
Right.
So, kind of helps me stick out a little bit more. So,
well,
it is catchy.
Yeah. when we got started in this, you know, we're on Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff, and you just kept popping up everywhere, and we just saw you everywhere too. So yeah, we're like, we gotta check this guy out, see what he's about for sure, and get him on the show. So here we are.
Excellent. You are plan worked.
Yeah, it did. It did work. You are from Vermont, it says, and now you live in New York. Is that right?
Yeah. I grew up in northern Vermont, just outside of Burlington, near Lake Champlain. And back in 2014, the company that I was with, I relocated out to just below the beginning of the Adirondacks in upstate New York. So I'm about 20 minutes south of Saratoga Springs.
Okay.
And so this is where I reside now.
Lake Champlain. So we're talking about Champ up in that area, right?
We sure are. My first love, my first monster cryptid love.
Right. So you've written the book American Cryptids. Basically, you've said you have a love for this, but what inspired you to do that?
It's just years and years of just different research that I've done, and just kind of getting it out of my head and getting it down on paper. You know, but also in a way where it's not exactly what everybody else had already written or done, in a sense. So I kind of, you know, came up with my own formula with each chapter and how I kind of wanted it to flow. But that was pretty much it. I mean, I've always loved to write. I've released some other publications, and but it's something I've always done and I've always enjoyed. And I can't draw to save my life, but I used to love to draw. I don't know if you guys remember, but it was back in, I'd say maybe like the late 80s, early 90s, where you know, people would have like a jean jacket, and then they would, like, on the back of it, they'd have like a band or something, like it'd be painted on with like acrylic paints. Yeah. I started doing that in high school, and I had some real good, I did some really good ones until I screwed up one guy's jacket. That was it. I was done after that. But, yeah. So I've always kind of been into like the art side and of, different types of writings and music, and if you will.
Yeah, Brian and I are from that era. We were born in the 70s and grew up in the 80s and
yep.
And whatnot. So we know exactly 90s, what you're so, talking yep, about. We've been there.
So you were there in 1986 for the birth of the Beastie Boys.
Then. Oh,
yes,
yeah,
we were. Yes, we were.
Excellent. You know what's I love those guys, and I kick myself in the butt because I had opportunities to actually see them live, and I never went.
Okay.
So I kick myself in the butt for that now. But I don't know if you remember like the movies that they had out in the early 80s, like all the breakdancing movies.
Oh, are you kidding me? I had a pair of parachute pants, and I practiced my parents' linoleum floor.
Yeah, so did I. I learned to break dance, but I can't remember which movie it was. I think it was Beat Street or Breakin', but the Beastie Boys were actually in one of those, and they were really, really, really young. I think they were like 16 or 17.
I want to say
it was so young.
I want to say that was Breakin'. I'm going to look that up and see what that was. But yeah,
and they were just, it was just a short segment, but they were in there. It was before they like really, really hit it big. So it was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
so,
good. All right, I'm good time to live, right? Now. Good time to live.
Oh man, was a great time. I love the 80s.
We could just talk about this all night if you guys.
We could talk about that all night.
I'm game.
But tell us some of your favorite places that you went here in the book to research and investigate a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, being from Vermont. Vermont is, you know, my favorite chapter in the whole book, but there's a lot of different places in the book, you know, that I've been to. But I would definitely say, you know, Vermont would be, you know, again, just growing up there. But you know, the funny thing is, and I'm staying on topic, but you'll notice I'm one of those guys that kind of gets off topic but then pulls myself back. The funny thing is, while I was living in Vermont, other than like the Bennington Triangle, which is down in like southern Vermont, I never really heard of really any type of like Bigfoot sightings or Sasquatch sightings in the state of Vermont. Like I heard of like the Fairfield Pigman and, you know, different things like that, but I never really heard of anything. So it was just kind of weird because, you know, when you get to like the southern end of Vermont, and then, you know, you go into like, you cross over into New York and like through Whitehall and in Massachusetts, you know, there's a ton of sightings and reports there. And I'll talk to other individuals and they'll be like, oh yeah, there's so many all over Vermont. I'm like, why did I never hear about them? So it was really crazy because I started writing this book obviously after I left Vermont. And again, I looked into different sightings in Vermont, but I never really got a whole lot of feedback from anybody. So actually the Bigfoot sighting that I put in there in American Cryptids for Vermont, I actually had to do a lot of digging to find it more than like any other state. So it seemed to be the toughest one to find a sighting in that to put in the book. But it was just crazy because again, you've got the Bennington Triangle where it's not just like Sasquatch, there's all kinds of weird, you know, they say, you know, ghost type of portals and all kinds of craziness that goes on. But other than that, like from there up, I'd never really ever heard of anything.
One of the first encounters or stories that you have in your book that I came across that kind of interested me was the Alaska Kodiak dinosaur. Is that something mm-hmm. like a Loch Ness monster kind of creature or what is that?
Yes and no. I mean, from everything that I've read in research, it's like a prehistoric dinosaur that just somehow survived. You know, I don't know how. It definitely serpentine in sense, but you know, definitely more of a actual like dinosaur figure type of entity, if you will, or creature, not necessarily entity, but
right.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, in there was a lot on it, but yet it was kind of all vague too, because what I've noticed is, like, you know, doing a lot of the research on the different cryptids, unless it's a popular one, when you look them up, you get the same story every single time. Like it's a couple here mm-hmm. or a couple there. It's not like, you know, with Sasquatch or Mothman or, you know, something like that, where you get all kinds of encounters, get all kinds of activity. There wasn't a whole lot really to go on, but again, it was a legend, you know, that had been out in a mystery, which that's really what keeps me going in these subjects, is just the mystery of you know, in legend. Like I love anything legend and lore, so
yeah,
that is my dog, if you guys hear that.
That's okay.
Oh yeah.
We have that a lot. One thing that I really like about the format and how you put the book together, Kenny, is how, you know, you don't have to pick it up and start from the beginning and read it all the way through. You can go to different parts of the book. I think you break it down by state. Is it all 50 states in there?
Yes.
You pretty much cover some kind of cryptid being in each state. And I like the fact that there's a lot of different kind of things in there that aren't just Bigfoot. But also in the same sense, you also tell along with, there's a lot of Bigfoot sightings in those states as well. And you try to cover that too. So I just like how you format that together. And like I said, you can just be laying in bed, pick up a book, read a couple stories, you know, here and there, and not have to worry about start to finish, so to speak. And you can read it over and over and over too. So I like that. Yeah, I like that format up for sure.
It's an easy read.
And good. And that was part of the point with it too, was a lot of the time when I'm reading books, you know, I'm reading them, they're really good books, but a lot of the time it's just kind of like information kind of, you know, being thrown at you. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote the book, I wanted to do it very different. I didn't want to write it in the same formula that, you know, everybody's already written the books, which that's how it started at first. Like, you know, chapter one was Wendigo, chapter two was Mothman. I'm just like, I want to do something different. I want to make it more personal. So I that's when I decided, you know what, I'm going to cover all 50 states and I'm going to write it as if not, you're just reading it like as I'm the author, but I wrote it as like, I'm your tour guide and I'm taking you on a journey across the country, you know, to explore unknown mysteries and different legends. It was a lot more fun writing it that way as well, because I didn't feel like I was just putting in, you know, encounters in there, you know, that everybody kind of already knew about. And, you know, and I really, you know, again, the format, like, you know, it's not a book that you pick up and, you know, you learn all kinds of this and that, but yet at the same time, it opens up with some history on the actual state, which, part of the reason for that was anybody who picks up the book, the first thing they're going to do is go right to their either their home state or where they're living now, and they're going to look at it, and then they're going to feel like a connection to it, you know, just based off of that. So, it, you know, for me, it was also making it personal in that sense, again, where I'm taking everybody on a journey across the country, exploring, you know, the mysterious and the unknown and the legends, as well as, hey, you know, you can pick it up as a reader and actually be able to have some type of connection with it too.
Yeah. And it's cool because if you're like us, you know, we like to travel around and go to these certain spots where sightings and things have happened, and you kind of spell those out somewhat in the book too. So if you're someone who likes to travel and you can go to each state and try to find these different creatures that you mentioned in these books. But I gotta think it was probably hard on some of these states to do your homework and get some of this information. Was it not?
It was, I would say, in the end, it didn't turn out to be as hard as I thought it was going to be, because obviously I couldn't get to all 50 states. You know, I there's just no way it was going to happen. And I didn't want to be that guy at the end of the chapter to just go on Google and go BFRO, Bigfoot sighting here, put that in there. You know, again, I didn't want to be that guy. So for me, it's like those really, really stuck out to me. So those are the ones that I took and I put at the end of each chapter. There were a couple that, that were famous that I did use, like for Whitehall, New York, the Hebert Road incident or encounter, I should say. I did use that. And one of our research, or a couple of our research areas, are just outside of Whitehall. But for the most part, every Bigfoot encounter at the end of the book is one that you're pretty much not going to find anywhere else, because I literally had to like do homework and get creative, and again make phone calls, and because I didn't know how I was going to do it. You know, originally it was like I was closing the chapter out again. If it was West Virginia. Because it starts out, each chapter starts out with the history, then goes into some Native American history and the Native American lore, and then whatever the popular cryptid is for that state. And that's kind of how the chapter was ending. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I feel like it's missing something. It's still missing something. So I had to get really creative. And I came up with that game plan of using, you know, instead of using Google search, using Google Maps. And then it kind of all came together after that.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I picked out a few of the stories in here I want to talk about, maybe if we can for a little bit here. And I picked out some different kind of cryptids. I don't want to talk about just Bigfoot. Brian, when Brian and I started the show, we said, hey, we don't want to make this the Bigfoot show. We want to make it the cryptid show. Sure. So the Kentucky one, the devil monkey. What's your thoughts on the devil monkey? I believe people describing this thing as like a mix between a dog man and a Bigfoot with a tail. I don't know. What is this thing?
I have no clue. That's the funny thing is, it's a lot of the time when I get those like direct questions like that, that is my answer. I don't know. I tried to put as much detail in the book, as I possibly could. So anything that's in the book, that's the best that I could do. That's right. The best that I could come up with and with all the information. Because, it was one thing, talking with people and getting witnesses, of a popular subject such as Bigfoot. But you get on the phone and you're talking to people like, hey, the devil monkey. They're like, what are you talking about? You know, so I really don't know, a lot of the cryptids that I covered, this character, but then I was like, at the same time, I'm like, well, if that's what's out there, that's what's out there. Like, I don't, I also don't at the same time, like, I didn't want to like elaborate and bring anything into it that wasn't raw, from where I was taking the research from. Right. So, again, a lot of them, like the Kodiak dinosaur. I mean, what you read is what I know.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be a Loch Ness monster type creature to me.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Plesiosaur, whatever they call that
thing. Plesiosaurs. Yeah. It's funny too, because a lot of, when it comes to like the different serpents, a lot of the time, folks will kind of say like a plesiosaurus type of creature. They say that about Loch Ness as well. Which with Loch Ness, I guess I could maybe see it a little bit more, but when it comes to like Champlain monster, like with the plesiosaurus, like its back would, when it's up out of the water, like it would be like one hump. But a lot of folks that have witnessed Champ say that there's multiple humps. And growing up on Lake Champlain, a lot of, you know, the pictures that folks have showed me and a lot of witnesses, what they've explained, they always said that there were humps, that there were always humps there. So for me, I think it's, you know, definitely more of like a snake-like serpentine creature. I believe Loch Ness is probably very similar, but, you know, with Loch Ness, it's I've never really come across a lot of encounters where folks talk about there being, you know, multiple humps. It's usually, you know, something that looks Loch Ness, like the original picture.
Yeah, so, that's what I've always heard.
Some other ones you have on there is, of course, the Michigan Dogman. I mean, you can't leave him out.
I didn't dare leave him out.
We've talked about that before. We have no clue what that is. I guess werewolves are real. So
that's where I'm at. And I've always put the Dogman in like the werewolf realm. Cause I've searched and I've talked to many different people. I've come up with many different answers. And, you know, as far as like, you know, Dogman, I've gotten multiple different answers of where that's actually come from. So at that point in time, that's where I just simplify it. And I say, you know what, I'm just going to say werewolf.
Yeah. Might as well.
That's what I think it is.
Yeah, I used to watch The Howling when I was a kid and be terrified. Yes. But thinking, thank God these things aren't real. Thank God this is just a movie.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
Well, I watched, I think it was The Howling a couple of weeks ago. I think it was the fourth movie where it was like a circus that came into town. I think it was a Howling movie or circus. The circus came into town and, I think the owner of the circus was like some type of like, you know, evil overlord or something like that. And, he captured him to have him in the show. And it was really corny, but it was really cool. You know, when he changed to the creature, watching it and all the special effects that they used. Yeah. Especially for, you know, movies from that time.
Yeah. You've got Sheep Squatch in there. Of course, Lake Champlain, Champ. The book has a lot of encounters and stories in there.
Just a ton of them. Yeah. It's very well
put
together.
Like I said, I love how I can just pick it up and just, you know, turn to whatever state, like Indiana, you know, our state. I wasn't sure what that would be. But you described something about a lizard man or a creature from the Black Lagoon down in Evansville that ladies had encountered down there. So that was interesting for sure. And actually in Indiana, we've had Bigfoot encounters too. On our show already, we've interviewed quite a few people from Indiana that have had encounters, which are kind of surprising to us. But do you ever get out and do a lot of investigating, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say last year, I believe it or not, we actually got out more last year during COVID than we did this year when we didn't have COVID. Well, obviously still having COVID, but, you know, things being open. But this year has just been like a total complete bust for me.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, every time something comes up, you know, another person in the group can't make it or whatever. So it's just kind of been up in the air. So we're hoping before, you know, the snow starts flying, we're going to be able to get out. But yeah, we've got a couple areas that are, just outside of Whitehall, New York, which, you know, Whitehall's the epicenter, you know, Bigfoot sightings on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And, they actually just had their Sasquatch Festival there this last weekend.
Were you there?
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you go to that?
Yeah, it was, Yeah. I was one of the speakers there.
Cool.
It was a phenomenal turnout. There was a few thousand people there, and it was just it was a great time. They had filmmakers there, other researchers, other authors, Paul Bartholomew. He was there. He's pretty much kind of like the Bigfoot go-to guy of Whitehall, and he's pretty much, in my opinion, the one that kind of put Whitehall on the map. Steve Coles was there. The guy who's he goes as the Squatch detective. He's done a lot of different shows. Like he's been on like Monster Quest and different shows like that. That's how you say his first name. I'm going to slaughter the guy's name, but there's a couple guys there, you know, like, that have worked with like small town monsters that make the documentaries. Okay. Some of those guys were there.
Yeah.
So it was a great time. Again, there was a lot of people there, and it was good to be able to get out and be able to, you know, see, you know, people that, you know, you talk to online or whatever, and actually be able to be face to face with them. So it was good. It was the second event this year that I've done, and I've got two more this year. And last year I had like 12 events, but as we know, COVID just put a bosh to all that. So I believe if we're going to look at all cryptids, I think there's a combination across the board of spiritual, interdimensional, extraterrestrial, and flesh and blood. I've had folks when it comes to the Mothman actually, you know, say to me that, you know, they believe it was actually a demon, that, you know, had come out and shown itself. And, so I don't know. I think it's a combination, and until we can actually have one, I guess, right in front of us and we can actually figure it out, I don't know, but again, it's just at one point in time, I was pretty, I don't want to say I was pretty certain, but I was kind of leaning one way, and now I'm just kind of, I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't, when it starts making sense, then it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, you're right. So, yeah. The more I've dug into it, the more confused I've gotten. You can't rule anything out, and nobody really knows. Yet. Hopefully someday we will. And that leads into my next question. Why do you think Bigfoot hasn't been discovered yet? If so many sightings are going on out there, are they that elusive? Is there cover up? What's your opinion on that?
I would have to say at this point in time, it may be more of a cover up than elusive. I think elusive, yes, absolutely. They've been, you know, talked about for thousands and thousands of years. So obviously survival skills have, you know, been passed down, but I think maybe more sightings, basically in some areas, depending on, you know, a lot of new neighborhoods being built and forest land being taken down. But I even question myself. The founder of our group is even worse than me. So for him to tell me last January, halfway through January, when he was out hiking, and again, he's a wilderness guy. He hikes miles out in the woods on his day off just to turn around and walk back. I would die doing that. He feels accomplished doing that. So, and so not only that, like he knows, you know, his education is in background is in animal behavior. And so he knows what's in the woods. He's also a hunter. So for him back in January to tell me that, hey, just send me a message that says, I saw a Bigfoot. I just stopped everything I was doing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And right after he saw that, you know, like he took his phone out, took a picture. And of course it just shows like, you know, you could see something there, but you can't really 100% make it out. It was far enough away, but he also had the smarts and kept his head together enough that once he said, saw it turn around and go up over the side of the cliff, over the hill, he also snapped a picture of where it was originally standing. So that way, you know, because a lot of the time you see this one picture there and then you never see an after picture to show that, you know, whatever is in that picture isn't there anymore. But right after that, minutes right after that, all of a sudden out of the blue again, he's like miles into the Adirondacks, two forest rangers just show up out of nowhere. And usually when a forest ranger shows up, they just start digging right into you. What are you doing here? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. It was the other way around. Like Gary had to like talk to them to get information out of them. They're real standoffish. So conspiracy theory. I don't know. Were they tracking what he just saw? I don't know. You know, maybe they just happen to show up. And again, you know, they normally will go up one side of you and down the other, you know, ask you what property you're on and this and that. And apparently none of that happened. So I don't know. And that's somebody who I know and I trust with my life when I go out into the woods. So I know that he's not BSing me. And again, he's not that type of a person. He's the first person when somebody, you know, says, hey, listen to this sound. This is a Bigfoot howl. He's like, no, it's a barred owl. you know, he's the first person to be able to say, no, I know what this is, because again, that's what his degree's in.
And debunking it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, debunking or, you know, as we call it, you know, just, bringing to light another possibility.
Yeah. There you go.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, so for him to be able to say that again, I mean, this is somebody who, you know, I trust with my life when I go out in the woods, because where I'm weak in that area, I mean, he's like the pro. I mean, if somebody gets lost in the woods, you send Gary out there, he'll come back with them and Jimmy Hoffa, you know,
yeah. You guys still looking for Jimmy? I got him right here.
Yeah. So I don't know, you know, it very well could be some type of a cover up again. I mean, you know, for the longest time, you know, UFOs don't exist. It was a weather balloon. There was a reason for it. Well, now they exist. They haven't said, oh, what, by the way, there's extraterrestrials flying them around. You know, they're more talking about, you know, just, you know, there's unidentified objects that, you know, are, out technology, when it comes to technology, they're kind of outperforming us, and which is kind of scary in itself. But yeah. And then of course that's another rabbit hole you go in as you start talking about that. I was on a show last night with have you guys ever heard of the Crypto Kid?
I'm not sure if I have. Have you, Brian?
I don't think so.
He's got a radio show, and he's smart as heck. Awesome, awesome.
Check
awesome
it out.
Kid. And his name's Colin Schneider. And like we were talking about that last night. And again, it's just like, that's the thing with these subjects too, is that there's, I mean, how many times have you started talking about like a real surface situation having to do with any one of these things, and then all of a sudden, like, you realize it's 45 minutes later and you're all down separate rabbit holes, mm-hmm. trying to figure out how to get back to where you originally started.
Yeah, all the time.
There's so much to cover, so much to cover, and nobody really knows, you know, like we said, mm-hmm. Until we have a body, until there's some kind of proof, and hopefully someday that'll happen. Thinking about everything in the spectrum of between Dogman and Bigfoot and portals and you name it, it's just crazy. But
yeah,
people are seeing stuff out there for sure. Yeah. They're not making this stuff up. Oh, they have nothing to gain for it.
Right.
You know, we don't pay anybody to come on the show. You know, but people come on and they tell these encounters, and like you, you know, I've written a book about a lot of encounters, over 100 or so, probably maybe a couple hundred in there. I'm not sure how many are in there.
Yeah.
I'm talking about taking a picture. If I saw one, I don't know at this point if I would even, unless I knew I was going to have a long time to stare at it, I don't know that I'd even mess with trying to get my phone out, because mm-hmm. I'd miss what I was going to see for those 2 or 3 seconds right. anyway. Mm-hmm. I'd probably just take that in and be like, there, yeah. That's my encounter. I saw it. I don't have a picture. I don't need one. It's in my head now. Unless you're going to come up on a family or somebody that they don't know you're there, or you can video record this thing for several seconds or minutes, a lot of people aren't going to really get a good picture. And if they do, it's probably going to be, you know, sketchy or blurry or whatever.
Blurry.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, the picture, you know, again, it I wouldn't say it was blurry. It was more, it was a little bit of a distance away. So it was more of a blotch, I guess, if you will. And I think that probably has to do with the fact that, you know, again, it turned around and hurried up over this hill. And, you know, if it was a bear, Gary just would have been, I never even would have heard from him that day. Right. But, you know, from what he was seeing and how he explained it, and the fact that he couldn't explain it to be anything else. And again, he was in the right of mind. I mean, he's been doing it for a long time, and, he was at least, to a degree, when I say in the right of mind, to be able to, again, snap a picture after where he saw it to show that there's nothing there now. Yeah. But, you know, and that's the thing, you know, when we think about coming across something like that, a lot of the time, you know, folks will be like, oh, follow it, do this and do that. But anybody you talk to that's had a true encounter, they're going to tell you that's not that. You're trying to still process what's going right. on in front of you, because what's you're seeing in front of you goes against everything that you have grown up to believe and understand. Mm-hmm. And now there's something there that's just totally out of this world. And, you know, that processing it just slows you down because you just, you don't know what to do. You know what you think you, right, you should do, but actually getting it done is totally different.
Well, and one thing that I started thinking about was, you know, you're right. We're not programmed to believe in these things. We're told they're monsters, you know, we're told that monsters are out there, the wolf man or Frankenstein or whatever, the big hairy man, the booger man. They're monsters, but they're not real. You know, there's books about mm-hmm. them. There's folklore about them, which is very yeah. interesting. But now you're kind of finding out that maybe these things are real, and that's why people talk about them, and that's why there is folklore and legend about these yep. things. So, you know, and it's a shock to think that, oh my God, monsters are real, but maybe yeah. they really are. So,
well, one of the questions I get a lot is why do you think that there's so many, you know, reports now? You know, for me, there were reports like 20 years ago, but not like there are today. And I think some of that has to do with obviously technology and social media. But the other thing too is I you know, for instance, before I saw the show Ghost Hunters, what I understood ghost hunting to be was the show Ghostbusters, the movie Ghostbusters. And when I can't even remember what year it was that Ghost Hunters came out, like 2001, maybe 2002. And I just happened to come across it on TV, and I'm not a ghost guy. I try to avoid all that at all costs. And I'm like, what is this? So I'm watching it, and I'm like, God, people actually do this. And then all of a sudden, after that, you know, after that show came out and the popularity, you know, to it, you know, all of a sudden, you know, everybody became a paranormal investigator. And I think the same thing really happened. I mean, there were a lot of cryptid monster shows that were mainstream, but didn't make it mainstream like mm-hmm. the show Finding Bigfoot did. Like the show Monster Quest, Doug Hischek, mm-hmm. The producer and creator of that show. That,
I love that
in
show.
My opinion, that's the best cryptid show ever.
It is.
100%.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Hands down, best hands cryptid down. Show.
Doug, if you're listening, you do an awesome job, and we'll get you on the show too.
Definitely get Doug on the show. I actually just signed with Doug recently, so Doug's cool. representing me, and yeah, Doug's literally wow. like my TV producer cryptid hero. I mean, again, that Monster Quest was just top of the line, just right. top of the line. But Finding Bigfoot came out, and they had the same people in it, and you know, they had, you know, there were characters too, very memorable. Yeah. And so for a lot of people, you know, knew Bigfoot based off of, you know, something that they'd heard here or there, but never thought twice about it, but then started watching the show and blah, blah, blah. So, mm-hmm. you know, like Ghost Hunters made, ghost hunting mainstream, if you will.
Right.
I believe Finding Bigfoot made Bigfoot mainstream and really helped it get it to that next level. And mm-hmm. so I think, to be honest with you, I think not just because of social media, but I think the fact that, again, 20 years ago, if you said, hey, I saw a Bigfoot, you're a total complete nut job, and you know, you had to hide in your group. Now it's cool to say that you had an encounter. Now mm-hmm. it's okay because there's people out there saying it. So it's not taboo. It's not, you know, it's not, again, you're not nutty. You're still a little crazy, but yet there's people that accept that now.
Right.
Where before right. it yeah. wasn't. It's the same thing with Dogman. You know, people are like, Dogman seemed to have like taken off in the last six or seven years. Well, again, you know, it's not, you know, having an encounter, you don't have to live in the dark anymore. If you came across something that you didn't understand or didn't make sense, now there's groups that you can go to that you can talk to, and that people feel comfortable about it now. So again, say you had an encounter nowadays, it's cool, which it unfortunately is kind of reckless at the same time, because now, you know, people are going to see what they want to see, and then, you know, say it was a Bigfoot when it wasn't, you know, it was just a misidentification. Right. So it can become reckless. But I really believe that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, there's so many sightings now, and, you know, people are coming out of the woodwork with it, is that they're not looked at as a total complete nut job anymore.
Yeah.
Just a little nut.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the population is growing on both sides of the fence. Bigfoot and people. I think that nowadays, like you said, it's more acceptable to say, hey, I saw something weird back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and even about the 80s. I mean, people were looked at as goofballs if they said they saw something like that. And a lot of people didn't talk about it. And I would say to this day, probably a lot of more people that do see them don't report or don't say anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
And live with it for the rest of their lives, which is sad because, you know, people, they need to know. This needs to get out. And that's why we're doing the show. Talking to guys like you. You're putting the book out. Getting the word out there, making people more acceptable to the fact that this could really be true. You know, it points to it being true more than not. So, but one more thing, Kenny, before we wrap this up. You're on a show now, is that right, called Haunted Hospitals? Are you working on a show with the Travel Channel?
I was just going to ask
I filmed with Haunted Hospitals. And actually, the episode aired back in, I believe it was June. But you can still catch it on Travel Channel on reruns, as well as the Discovery Plus app. And if you guys don't have the Discovery Plus app, I highly recommend you getting it. Completely worth it. Like every show is on there, and it's phenomenal.
Yep.
So you can catch it on there. It's season 3, episode 2 that I'm in.
Okay. I'll check it out.
You said you got a new book coming out, or is out. You just haven't promoted. Go ahead and lay that on us.
Yeah. So I also write young readers chapter books, and I released one back in 2020 through Dark Moon Press Publishing called Stanley Riker and the Bigfoot Runaround. It's about three friends, two boys and a girl. They're in third grade, and they go to their favorite camp for the weekend. It's called Camp Daybreak. And when they get there, the camp counselor talks to them, you know, and tells them a story about how there's been some Bigfoot sightings in the area. And because of this, their camp could potentially close down. So they get together and come up with a plan to capture the Bigfoot, turn the Bigfoot into the sheriff, and be able to save the camp. That's called Stanley Riker and the Bigfoot Runaround. And again, that was through Dark Moon Press. American Cryptids in Pursuit of the Elusive Creatures, the one we were talking about earlier that covers all 50 states, that was actually released through Beyond the Fray Publishing, who also represents like Ken Gerhard and a lot of the big names in cryptids and the paranormal. But my second young reader's chapter book, it's called Alexandria in the Moonlight Caper. It's the same three characters, but what I like to do is I like to change up the main character in it, meaning Stanley Riker was in the Bigfoot book, like he was the main character. In this one, Alexandra actually steps up and she's the main character in it. She's the voice of it. So if there's a young lady that picks up the book, you know, she doesn't feel like, okay, well, this is just a boy voice through the whole thing. You know, there's a variety there, but it's called Alexandra and the Moonlight Caper, and it dunks.
Right on. Well, man, we appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, so much, man. This was fun.
Are you still out there playing any punk music? That's my last question.
I have retired the stages, although I did back in March finally take the step, and I bought a drum set because I always wanted to be a drummer. So that one Christmas, I got a guitar and an amplifier. So I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. So I learned to play the guitar. So every time there was an opportunity to play in a band, it was guitar, or then I ended up, you know, picking up the bass. But so it was always either bass or guitar, and always wanted to play the drums. So I finally just jumped last March, and I got a set now, and I'm learning to play it. And,
nice.
I don't know. Maybe it's not too late, man.
Yeah, maybe. You got connections, I'm sure.
Guitar, maybe you guys can get together.
Yeah,
we could jam out sometime. Well, Brian, you got anything else for Kenny before you let him out of here?
we really appreciate you coming on finally. The book is really awesome. Yeah. Keep doing what you're doing, man. Enjoy it.
To the listeners, it's American Cryptids in Pursuit of the Elusive Creatures, Kenny W. Irish. So make sure you get a copy of that out there and check out his other books as well. And we'll be watching for your up and coming shows. And we'll be looking forward to meeting you and seeing you at CryptidCon as well, Kenny.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. Definitely.
I know. We're excited. I can't wait.
Yeah. They got a great lineup of people there. I'm one of the speakers, but man, I'll tell you, I'm going to be more hanging out with, I'm just so excited about it.
Definitely.
Next month I'm going to be in Indiana at DeadCon.
That's right. That.
Where's that at? Yeah. Where's DeadCon at?
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
What day? Brian, we got to go
from us.
We got to at least go and hang out.
Yeah. I think it's the 15th, 16th and 17th. But I mean, it's like Ken Gerhard's going to be there. The guys from Ghost Hunters are going to be there. Ghost Hunters International. They're going to have the bass player from Megadeth is going to be there. A bunch of guys that play Jason Voorhees is going to be there.
Oh, okay.
Some guys that played awesome. Leatherface are going to be there. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Kane Hodder was supposed to be there, but he had to back out. He was one of the guys who played Jason and he also played, I believe, Victor Crawley, I think the guy's name is, in the Hatchet movies. I could be wrong, but I believe he was the killer in those movies as well. So, but yeah, there's going to be so many awesome people there. Daniel Kloss is going to be there, the Hinsdale House guy. It's gonna be awesome.
I see Brian over there with a look of despair because he knows what's gonna be going on. I think we're gonna be in Oregon that week. Yeah. Unfortunately, Kenny, I think, but we're going to Oregon to do some investigating, Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, we're gonna try and get out while we're up there.
But if we don't leave too early, we'll definitely can come check it out.
They do it every year. Dead Con's every year, so
okay, cool.
That's awesome. Cool. Right in Fort Wayne, man. That's
we're not far.
Eric Verner is the owner of Dark Moon Press Publishing and the owner of Dead Con. So he's a good guy, real good guy. So.
Cool. All right. Cool.
We'll check it out. Well, man, you have yourself a good one, and appreciate it again coming on.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We'll be in touch, and we'll talk, and hopefully hear some more stories from you.
All right. Awesome.
Hopefully we can get you back on here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt.
Right on, man. Okay, well, you take care and have a good one. Thanks again.
You as well.
Take it easy.
Thanks, man.
Cool, man. That was awesome talking to him.
Yeah, it was. That was fun. I hope we can get him on again.
Yeah.
On the road.
Yeah. He's been to a lot of places, talked to a lot of people, and he did his homework on writing that book for sure.
Yeah, he did. Excellent book.
And like you were talking about it before we got started, it's an easy read, and it's cool because it's kind of like a coffee table book. You know, you pick it up, you can flip to any story you want to, and just read that story. It takes a few minutes, and you know, you've read it. So that's what's
going on. And it's by state too. So if you want to pick it up and go right to your state, see what's going on. It's fun.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So once again, everyone, thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
As always. Couldn't do it without you guys.
Right.
I mean, we could, but what fun would that be talking to ourselves?
Right. Hey, if you guys out there have had an encounter and you want to come on and talk to us, we'd love to have you. Email us, info@cryptidcreatures.co.
Yep. You can get us on Twitter and Instagram.
Facebook.
And always on the Facebook.
Right. So
Cryptid Creatures.
Yep. Check us out on Facebook. Come join our group. We do weekly episodes, obviously. So, and all that other stuff. So, Brian, thanks again for hanging out, man.
Oh, yeah. Always fun.
All right. Till next time.
Yep.
All right. See you, man.
See ya.